I've been involved in the past little over a week now in a lot of discussions about families, and what I've particularly enjoyed has been the forum. And it seems like about three sessions now we've been talking about family life, about the congregation and the responsibility of the church, particularly just in the session before regarding the single person in the church. And so there may be a lot of issues that are brewing from these other sessions, and I know it was our intent that we would address things formally ever so briefly and to have more time for discussion. So maybe some of what we'll be talking about won't be just from what we hear right now, but will be reaction to something else. I've been in the church a long time, in all kinds and shapes and sizes, and many different pastors. And I think as I think about my personal needs in the family and in the relationship to the church, is that and what I miss, not so much, well, we're in a unique situation in that Gene is a pastor 50 miles north of San Antonio, and so sometimes he is my pastor and I accompany him, and sometimes I go to a local congregation which is very close to our home. And something that is missing for me is a feeling of community in the particular congregation that is close by. And I think one thing that I hope that we can address is how can we enrich our relationships in the church. And it may be with the unit of the family, and it may be in another definition of family, which is sometimes small groups where you build community, and that's often called family. And so that's something that I hope that we can talk about more this evening, and other issues which you might raise.
I'm Gene Fode, and one of the concerns that I would like to suggest as a way of assisting in the beginning of the forum is what kind of theological response, what kind of biblical response will the church, which is all of us, make to the change and the crisis that is often experienced in the family. And I would just like to say that it seems to me that when we mention family, we're not doing this in some kind of exclusive sense, which means that other people are not important, singles, etc. But there is a concern for the family unit itself, and however it may be defined, that's confusing in itself, and I don't choose to comment on that at this point. But what kind of theological response do we make to the change, the crisis that we sense in the family? And I guess that what I am concerned about personally is the fact that there is a strong tendency in the church, in all of its variety, including the Lutheran church, very strongly in the midst of that, to make a kind of legalistic response to the renewal or the reestablishment of the family. And that concerns me because I don't think it's biblical. And one of the things that I will be doing later on in the week on Saturday morning is to do a Bible study, which is essentially an effort to try to arrive at some kind of, acceptable to me at least, awareness of what Scripture has to offer in terms of understanding family life today. The reason I say a concern for legalism is that very often those who are getting the most play on television and in books that are being read very widely, and probably some of us have read them, tend to say that the way you recover the family is to restore male headship, as though that is some kind of a biblical formula in itself, which will continue or deepen the life of the family, which then restores, it would seem, in the family a new kind of obedience, that the wife and the children, you get a hierarchical chain, and that often is justified, particularly on the basis of Old Testament passages, if not new. And that also seems to tie us up with all kinds of things that don't have much to do with peacemaking, including often a fear of communism and the enemy that's coming after us, so we have to build more military armaments to take care of it. It's a kind of spiral. And it is connected with Moral Majority and some other similar type organizations in our society today. I really do not think those are biblical. I think that if we're serious about the way we interpret Scripture, that that kind of attempt to renew the family has no place. So, what isn't going to be in place of that? That's our task, to really be clear about our own biblical understanding of renewal and how God's Spirit is working today and the kind of family structure and the life of the church that will meet the needs of the family today and renew it in a different kind of gospel-centered way.
My name is Ted Peters, and I share the concerns that Mona and Jean have already mentioned. I'd like to put a third issue on our agenda for this evening and solicit your discussion and consideration. It's an issue which came up last Saturday, and I'll repeat it. It didn't get enough airing then. And the question is this: does congregational life as we know it now work to support the family, or does it work to destroy it? It has often been said that the family that prays together stays together, and that somehow or other church life in this country has the reputation of supporting family life. Well, that has not been my experience. My experience has been the opposite. I grew up in Michigan in an American Lutheran church in which we did everything right. And that means that whenever my family set foot on church property for anything other than Sunday morning worship, we had to split up. We had men's fellowship and men's softball team, men's bowling team, and father and son banquets that took out all the men. We had women's circles and a women's bowling team and a women's softball team, and church bazaars that took out all the women. We had Luther League for the teenagers, Junior Luther League for the junior teenagers, singles club for those that had graduated. When they got married, they joined the young couples club. Other than the annual Sunday school picnic, you couldn't do anything with your family while you were participating in church activities. Then I grew up, and I still didn't discover what was going on, even as a pastor, until just the last year in which I was in a parish as pastor with the Bill Stitch family, just a fine family, had four kids. This was in New Orleans. And they believed that serving God meant that they should serve the life of the parish, and they did that with great faithfulness. Sunday evening was Luther League, and one of the Stitch kids was the president of the Luther League, and the other was the adult advisor. Tuesday night was women's circle, and Mrs. Stitch went to that because she was a working woman. Wednesday night was choir, Mom and Dad Stitch, and one of the kids came for that. Thursday night, if we had Christian education, they always wanted to show up to make sure that the program was going well. Friday night, luckily, we had no church activity. Saturday, an occasional men's breakfast. I forgot Monday night. Twice a month, we had either committee meetings or church council, and Postage was there for that. At least one of the kids was on a committee. On a good week, we could break up the Stitch family for 6 days. Now, in point of fact, the Stitch family held together very successfully. Even my mother and father did not get a divorce. But still, I cannot help but ask the question about the organization of church life as to whether or not it contributes positively to family unity, or whether, like every other institution in our society, work, school, etc., we stratify according to age, gender, and whatsoever, in order to keep people apart. And I would like to ask you, in your judgment, does the organization of parish life, which I presume is similar in your experience, does it contribute to the breakup of the family or the support of the family? And if you've had any experiences in your congregational life that have been rather creative and very helpful in terms of the family crisis, if you might share those with the group so that we can carry home some good ideas.
So it's an open forum.
I think the Stitch family had a focal point, whether they were together physically or not. So that seems to me to be a very positive thing.
Yeah, they did.
Couldn't hear.
She said, why don't you repeat it?
No, go ahead.
She said she thought the Stitch family had a focal point and that that did them well, even though they were physically separated from time to time.
To follow that a little bit, it's common ground. I'm a public school teacher, and I think the thing that I'm learning with students is the lack of common ground really hinders the family. And it sounds like the Stitch family had this focal point, and they had something in common.
Can you give us some examples of common ground?
Church life. Uh-huh. You know, you say Christian education, there's many levels of education. And if the family made an effort, maybe to eat dinner together, mm-hmm. or the Sunday afternoon conversation. You know, if there are certain times when they were able to share their life at church.
Well, that's a good insight. You know what they did every summer? They went camping. They got away from the congregation. Now they were in that tent together. No, I'm slightly overstating the case. You're correct. They shared the same beliefs. They loved one another. They did things together when they could. And it's my belief in retrospect was, gee, I wish we could have contributed, made it easier for them to do things together instead of more difficult.
Or what about the family where there's only one family member who's dedicated in that same respect like Mr. Stitch was, and yet because there is that difference, he's gone all the time from the family. That would pose another issue when one family member is going in one direction, good as the cause may be or dedicated that he or she might be.
There's also carrying that on, and so many congregations are one parent family because of divorce and such as that, like that. And in one congregation, we set up a support group for divorced parents, and I received so many different comments on that from divorced people and from pastors all around saying, hey, when we were divorced, the church just disowned us.
But yours was successful?
It helped some. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And lasted for a while, and like so many things. But it did help a certain group. But that's another area.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, please.
I think that when you have children, and you're taking them back and forth across the valley, to one meeting at 7 o'clock on Tuesday and another one on Thursday and whatnot, and especially going back to pick them up when you're tired, 9 or 10 o'clock, it causes a great deal of stress on the family and marriage and the loose tenors to go get the kid now. And I think that adds a lot of stress to a family unit.
I agree.
If it isn't the church and the church's activities, though, is it something else? Is it, you look at non-church families, and even church families, and it's hockey at 3 or 4 in the morning, and, that's Canada, sorry. But that's what it is in my community. I mean, that there's this commitment to hockey, commitment to baseball, or whatever it is, the ballet, ice skating, piano.
So people are going to do that to themselves regardless.
Yeah, for the sake of their children.
In the United States, the commitment is to TV.
Well, that's another thing. If it were not going out every day, wouldn't the family be sitting in maybe even three different rooms watching three or four different TVs? Not communicating anyway.
So you're saying the issue is really something different very often for the family, as a group of people in relationships, that they're really not unified or pulling together and sharing and deepening their awareness of each other and growing together anyway. That they you can surely be together as a household of a group of people and be growing very much apart from each other. So maybe the ministry of the church to the people within its congregations has to be focused a little more particularly than just to be concerned about how many meetings there are and who's going to which.
Yeah, being involved with council and stuff like that, it is hard to work out how you get all the things that you feel are important in the church life to fit in for families, so that those with young children don't always have to have both parents away, or so that they're not all, you know, sometimes we bring our children with us, but it's really hairy.
I'll play a devil's advocate. I kind of see that, like, a family like that, I want to know what they're doing in the community as a whole. I think if they're so church-centered, forgive me for saying that, if they're so church-centered, what are they doing out in their community? A person can be church or Christian, but you can take that, the gift that he has there, and also utilize it in the community to do some community benefit work or whatever. So he shouldn't be so withdrawn within his church in such a tight circle of acquaintances that, well, I guess I want to do that. My parents have joined a certain church, which is great. That's what they've done. They kind of withdraw within themselves. I think it's a shame. I think it's, you know, I don't happen to go along with your ideology right now, but I think you also need to function in the community. You're going to become too attached to, quote, your church, and you're not functioning within the community. I don't think you're.
You know, 4 o'clock in the morning with the hockey practice, would that be an example of functioning?
I'm not saying hockey practice. I'm saying that you can serve on a community board or whatever you want to do, but do possible board of meetings.
Community service
organizations. And athletic events are important too. I don't think you can fight watch that because you just got through saying that they were on a church baseball league or some type of thing too. Children came out like that way. Somebody has to volunteer to do it.
And if we focus back on the family, there are certain things that a family can do if you're wanting to be together. Two things come to mind. One is visitation at nursing homes, because oftentimes the residents have not seen young children for a long, long time, and it's very special. The other thing, in San Antonio, we have something called the Fund for Humanities, where houses are built with donated property sometimes, and the community people help build the house, and then when they have enough funds, they begin another house. And many people from the, not from the inner city, but from the suburbs come in and help them with landscaping or building the house or interior decorating or whatever. And that can be a family project also. Another idea is, and oftentimes when we have try vacation church schools. I know several years ago, where we go some of the time, they were not even able to have one because they could not get staff. But one idea was suggested to have an evening vacation church school with the entire family involved. I think what I like about coming to Holden is how I see adults relating to other people's children and remembering their names and caring for them in such special ways. And I know, especially with young parents, we get very tired and weary of having small children, and it's just delightful for someone else to love them too, and even maybe to take them for an afternoon, or could I borrow them for a day, or to, and also the issue at the forum several nights ago was, what about someone who has full-time care of a sick parent? And the exchange which could occur there also. How about it if I come and parents sit for an evening while you go with your friends and or whatever you'd like to do? So these kinds of services could be interchanged, and we could be interdependent on one another.
One thing that has been attempted in our church is to schedule meetings for different interest groups on the same evening, so it isn't running every night of the week. And I realize that takes some special consideration in scheduling, so one isn't over hours before.
Yeah.
But I think with enough planning, that can really be helpful.
One of the deeper concerns that I have had is, well, seeing the ministry of the congregation as really oriented to equipping all people as saints of God to be able to live that way. You know, to whether it's ministry in the community, ministry in the family, ministry on the job, whatever. We talk about things like that, and I think that probably some of the fragmentation that Ted has mentioned is just very difficult to overcome in its impact on the family. And out of a little book here called New Approaches to Family Pastoral Care by Douglas Anderson, I'd like to share, toward the end of his book, he wrote, The Three Little Pigs Revisited. And if I might just read this, I appreciate the opportunity because it makes a point much better than I could. Years had passed since the crisis with the wolf. The family of three little pigs had settled down comfortably in their brick house in the suburbs. Gradually, boredom had set in. Each of the little pigs felt empty. One day, they decided that what they were missing had to do with love, and they determined to go and seek love's meaning. The first little pig went to the library and read all he could on the subject of love. When he had finished, he learned a great deal, but still felt empty. The second little pig read in the newspaper that a famous pig was coming to town to deliver a series of lectures on the topic of love. This second little pig attended all the lectures. Sounds a little bit like Holden, doesn't it? And was filled with enthusiasm. His emotional high lasted 4 days. After that, his life was pretty much what it was before. The third little pig invited two other pig families over to their house one evening. All three families began sharing their life stories and continued late into the night. They found this so interesting that they decided to meet like this regularly. After several months, they discovered that they knew and cared about each other deeply. One evening, after the other families had left, the third little pig spoke to the others. Now I know what love is, he said, for I have experienced it. Now, one reason for sharing that is very much the intention of Holden and in our congregations and in our relationships as people there, whether we're in families or we're young or old or whatever, there is a very deep concern for community. And I think my question is, and it's really more of a biblical, theological one, what in the world can we do within congregations to create for ourselves, by the presence of the Spirit of God, because He empowers us to do that, the meaning of this kind of community together? So it's not only something that happens in a home, but it's something that is shared together by peoples of all kinds. And I just think one way that the third little pig experienced it was a kind of house church, or a kind of family cluster, or where groups extended family-wise of different ages and needs and so on are brought together. You know, is anyone doing anything like that within the congregation to provide caring and support and equipping and all of those good things that we assume should happen in terms of our being the church?
We did that for a period of time on Woodby Island. We were having really good success with it. And having, I think it was just about six families in each group. And you'd meet once a month as a whole group that way, too. And then if somebody needed something, they were also kind of in the same prayer group the people in, so that they would be involved. If they knew of a need for prayer and things like that, they would get in touch with each other. And it was just a really good feeling. Like you got to know them so much better because you spent some extra time with them that you probably wouldn't otherwise.
How were these groups formed? Did the people in the group decide, or were they chosen by lottery?
Put names in the hat, and for 6 months you were with that group. And then we put all the names back in the hat again, and pull them out again, and you got with a different group. As a family group that way.
But mm-hmm. Single people, older people, children were included somehow in those two?
Yeah, you could put your name in the hat as a whatever kind of a grouping or a single thing, the situation that you wanted to be, a couple or whatever. So it was really mixed up, and it would change. And because of that time limitation, also, you felt like you wanted to really get into it, during that period, because you wouldn't have forever to do it, you know, because you knew you were making a change soon. But it was a long enough length of time that you did get enough acquainted with them that the feeling stuck, you know, past that point. So.
I'm curious, you said you did this for a while.
Yeah, I'm sorry to say that with the change of administration, it kind of went out the window, which is really bad. But it could be brought back, you know, there's no reason why not. It just needs somebody to push it, I think. It does need planning. You can't just do it right out of, you know, without thinking about it.
Was it on a volunteer basis, and only those who wanted to participate
right.
did it? It wasn't for the whole membership.
No,
yeah,
you didn't need to do it. You didn't need to do it.
You know, this kind of thing will happen spontaneously. As she was, your gal in front of me talking, I was thinking, at our church, we for a long time have not had something just for families, where all the members of the family could really participate. And we've started, however, various things recently, but one of the things that just popped up spontaneously, I happen to have a large model railroad. It covers about 380 square feet. Part of our dwelling.
You're living
away.
We
now have what we call railroad potlucks. And one by one, church members discovered I had this thing, and lo and behold, they liked it, or else they had one also. I mean, it was an amazing number of men and women in our church interested. I don't know if it's just peculiar about that particular church or what. I was astonished. But anyway, one day about 8 men came to me and they said, "We're going to start a railroad club and we're going to meet at your house." Because I let kids run the thing. I have designed it so children, I mean right down to like 6 and 7, my boy learned how to about age 6. Can run it. You cannot hurt it. I only have one rule: don't hold any engine or anything over the floor. You know? Otherwise, you can't hurt the thing. And so I let kids do it. So the whole family comes out, and they all bring their food, and we crank up the ice cream freezer, and the whole show, all they run that thing, I'm exhausted. I want to go to bed. You know, it's 3 in the morning. But that's spontaneous. And it's exactly a family, a complete family thing. Even moms get beat because their kids won't let them run it.
Within our church, we have what we call sharing and caring, and we have 12 groups, and it consists of the whole congregation. And each group has all ages, married and single also, and do the household chores of the church, but also the sharing and caring part of it. And it has worked very well. It has brought in a lot of the people who were not participating before. Although we have not been too successful in the social part of it.
So it's more task-oriented, but you also have a prayer chain with it or something?
No, there's really not a prayer chain involved in it.
You meet together in terms of the sharing for like Bible
each
study
month,
and prayer?
Each group is
issues.
Responsible for 1 month, and that month only. So each person is, you know, has their duty for one
so
month
it's,
out of
yeah.
year.
So it's house 1 month out of the year that group functions. Okay.
But they do things like greeting, reading lessons during the service, coffee hour afterwards. If there's reception of new members, they will do the reception part. Cleaning the kitchen once a month, picking people and taking to doctor's appointments.
I'd like to suggest that we divide people, including families, at the very heart of what the church is about, namely our Word and Sacrament celebration every Sunday. That we may be all there together, but not all of us participate in the meal together. I think that we, also I wonder if I went to a place, a meeting of some kind of civil engineers or physicists, and sat for an hour in a situation that was totally over my head, whether I'd feel terribly welcome there. And so I think one of the reasons that we just save children under the grade six, at least intellectually, in our worship service, that we didn't plan for them to be there. And the less visible and audible they can be, the better off they are, or we are. So I think that if we're going to be inclusive, we have to start with the redefinition of family. I think our problem is we always start with the smallest circle and then move outward. And we see our images backwards, that somehow people and families support the church, and our image ought to be just the reverse, that the church supports people, supports a community of people. And that until we're really willing, and I say this as a pastor who hasn't been willing to go to that extreme yet, at least in terms of a worship service that is planned to be very inclusive, we do admit people of all ages to our community table. But I think we've got an enormous amount of work to do. When we build our building, we said to kids, after it's finished, you could see the congregation full of households with a lot of little children in them, and we had to install a stool so they could use the urinal, the boys' restroom, and another stool so they could get to the drinking fountain. And luckily we have a preschool there now, so that it says to our clientele that come there and in our community that at least there is some thought about little people. But I think we really missed the boat with, I think we're just looking at structural things in terms of our institutional life that many, many people are not willing to embrace, because it'll be hard work to make the worship service meaningful, because we think it has to be intellectual enough so that God is honored by at least the high school vocabulary, if not theological.
I'd like to pick up on part of what Charlie's saying, the presence of children in worship. It's my own belief that it's extremely important that the kids are there and that there's a reasonably high degree of participation. I have to see this existentially because I grew up in a Lutheran family and I hated church. I hated church all the way through college. In fact, I didn't like it very much in seminary. I wiggled too much. I couldn't keep my mind on it. I was forced to sit there. And at this particular point, my wife and I have found a congregation where our children sit in the front row. They seem to participate and enjoy it. And even though we moved, we keep driving the extra miles back there because that's kind of a precious little treasure, because I know it's tough for kids to make it in a Lutheran church service. I think that there's it's even more important with regard to the question of the family. There was a study done in Australia about churches closing, and I don't think it was a great study, but it's still interesting. And they studied churches that were closing, and then they tried to find a matching number of congregations that paralleled in terms of numbers of members and other kinds of characteristics. Those that closed, those that did not close. No, more than that. Those that were growing in membership. And then they compared stuff like budgets and this, that, all these other factors to look for a correlation or a negative correlation. And they found one absolute negative correlation. In all of the churches that closed, children did not participate in the worship service. In all of the churches that were growing, children did participate in the worship service. That was the only absolute fact. And I know from my own experience that there's something that you can't put words to and get a handle on, but I think is very important about a worship service in which you have children present and grandparents and everybody in between. Your presence there, whether you're single, married, with your family, or all alone, there's a sense in which, with that whole community of people, subliminally you're saying, that's where I came from, when you see the children, when you see the elderly, that's where I'm going. And my whole life is meaningful within this great context. And if in worship we stratify again, like we do in so many other departments of our life, we're missing this opportunity, I think, for the meaningfulness of life to come to expression in worship. So whatever steps we can take to make the children feel at home, I feel, are well worth the effort. And I know they're, and I sympathize with Charlie, they're difficult steps to take. We've got a couple of responses here.
I wonder at what capacity the children participated. Was it just lighting the candles, or did it go beyond that?
You mean with regard to my family?
No, with regard to the congregations that were shown as
well. Oh, that, yeah, that I don't know. It was a sociological study.
I wanted to mention another group, though, that is getting away from our families, and that's post-high school. We have some high school kids now, I mean, kids that are in college, and trying to find a group in a Lutheran church is difficult, that meets their needs.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know the answer, but just throwing it out.
Yeah.
Because they've tried. We have a combined, four churches that have combined with the use of a youth director. And he's trying to get a group. We find that most of the people that are going to this group, though, are married. So an 18-year-old isn't, you know, really happy about going into this group. She enjoys the companionship, mm-hmm. but she wants kids her own age. So I think we need to think of that age group, too.
I wonder, though.
I know, that's a hard one. Mm-hmm. That's a hard one.
Sometimes I wonder if, and Charlie was hinting to the, surely at this as well, if part of our difficulty isn't the fact that we zero in and parcel out various age groups and need groups almost exclusively as though they didn't belong together, and which leads to the fragmentation and the diffused time syndrome of somebody going this night, somebody the next, etc. And we're not very good New Testament theologians at that point, because the whole approach of the New Testament in terms of the church is more of a unity. It's interesting when you just take a concordance and discover this. If you want to look up family and related words like fathers and mothers and brothers and sisters, children, etc., you find there are all kinds of references in the Old Testament to those particular roles, natural roles within families. But when you look at the New Testament, instead there is emerged the role of community and the family of faith. That's the emphasis. And there is not very much attention at all to individual family units or something like that. I think that's intriguing. And maybe that says that we need to be much more holistic. Now, the kind of group that some have had, at least in part, that I mentioned earlier, like a family cluster group or house church, I don't believe there are very many congregations at this juncture that would be willing to even give groups like that a chance to be nourished and sustained over a period of time, because they're threatening. You know, I remember we were part of a group in one church, and where we were starting to gather, and we're really anticipating maybe that's the kind of thing that could happen. A very diverse, heterogeneous kind of group made up of people interested in deeper community, discovering our unity in Christ, the gifts that we might share, to really be a small version, you know, of the larger congregation, but not to be separated from the larger congregation. And I think we met twice, and the church council got so afraid that they essentially said, you can't do this. And so we lost, you know, for some of us, the opportunity of really building each other up in the more of the unifying faith in the midst of the diversity of people, with children included in that. You know, it was exciting as a possibility. I think in the Lutheran church particularly, we like to use leveling, that everybody is alike, so that we never do anything for anyone, you know, in terms of meeting the deeper needs of children, the deeper needs, but in a family sense, where everybody can participate. And be recognized and appreciated, just like we did the children earlier. You know, that could be a part of any Sunday morning in terms of worship, if somehow their needs were picked up and celebrated by all. at the same time.
I have a question. Is it really biblical that a church council should control such a group?
I don't know, but the church council did, and the group chose not to protest and felt it was too volatile.
See, my feeling is that politics shouldn't be in this, that we're trying to teach us a way of living, and that if we can't gather together and feel that we're part of the church, have approval, or we can't continue, then I'm wondering, is the church, as we know it, providing what we need? I found, and I am Lutheran, I have found that I've had to go outside of my church to have the feeding of what I need for me. And that disappoints me. I would like the Lutheran church to offer it to me. I find that I'm not going to stop. I'm not going to try to push it on the church, but I will continue seeking what I feel the Lord is leading me to. And I'd like the church to widen out a little.
He concerned me earlier about your group when you said a new administration came and your group, dispersed. Because the power of a group can be fantastic if the intent is, heartfelt and you continue. But it is a shame that, I don't know whether you met a new pastor or a new church council, but regardless, a power of a group of people together wanting something is very strong and should not be.
Okay, I shouldn't have quit there. I know, but I just didn't want to. Well, okay, it was a new pastor, and he felt that when we were doing that, then that the other groups that we had in the church, like, the other things that were meeting and everything, they were losing the interest for the people because they had this to take a place. And you prefer to go to lead our direction back to the old way we've been doing it. Years. So that's what it was.
Which probably separated all the people that were gathered there back into the other groups.
Yeah.
That
the good thing went out the window. Mm-hmm.
We tried transgenerational education one summer. In other words, mixing the different generations. Found it was very difficult to hold the adult interest and also the older young people to find a level at which things could be done in a meaningful way to include people of all generations. It sounded good, and we liked the idea. We found it very difficult to implement.
I think it would be very, it's always going to be more of a problem in your Sunday morning service and any of the educational areas, but the more fellowship areas, like having groups like that meet outside of your Sunday morning service is probably where it can be, the needs can be met more. And your children are going to be better about going to church if they like the people that they go to church and see there, and go to church with and see there, than if they know nobody and they don't understand the service. And but I too can't see, I cannot imagine a Sunday service being intelligible to my 3-year-old and interesting to me the whole way through. Mm-hmm. Tonight was good, but I wouldn't take that every Sunday.
Well, we ask our kids to take that every Sunday.
I was thinking about this too, back to Bible time. I'm sure the children were not catered to. We lived in a different generation where the children just had to go along with what the parents did. Now here we give our children a lot. And I don't want to go back to that. I mean, I want my child to understand as much as possible. I regret that I am in a church where he gets nothing out of it and we fight for him to sit still. But I don't think it should be all for children at the expense of adults.
We have a children's service at the beginning of our service, and it's very good. In fact, it's very good. We can learn from it.
Well, I think many, many congregations, ours doesn't do that, but that's very common to have a children's part of the service, and that's one way of doing it.
Well, we usually have a children's sermon that's sort of incorporated in, and I think 2/3 of the adults get more out of the children's sermon than a lot of what the pastor aims at them. so everyone enjoys it, as well as the pearls that come out from the children.
We feel that it's important for the children to feel at home in the church, and I think that has helped immensely in doing that.
Mm-hmm. When you were talking before about the Vacation Bible School or whatever they mentioned, Mona mentioned earlier about having that, our church has had at least it's been 2 years, I guess, running, that we've had a Vacation Bible School in the summer in the evening. And our church is very small, so that's probably why it's easier to do this. And everyone is included, and we all meet together in a circle to begin with, and our pastor talks kind of formally, and then we meet in separate groups, and we're not necessarily with our own children, but we're kind of divided up so that they're all ages, and then we work on a craft or whatever, and then come back and participate in a service. And the children, not only the children, but the adults, really have found it very, very meaningful. One year they did the Passion of Jesus, and each day they would do a different day of the Passion. And it was just and then at the end they did, marched into Jerusalem, and everyone had their banner, and it was an exciting time, not only for the children but for the adults. But this only lasted like for 1 or 2 weeks. It wasn't something that went on and on. And I think perhaps if it's something that's just if you could do this every once in a while, to get a program or something going. We had our church retreat, and it was kind of the same kind of an atmosphere where we were separated into different groups like this, and did things as a family unit, not with our own families necessarily. And that was a real meaningful time too. But I don't think you could do it constantly.
We had kind of an adaptation of something like that in a large church that we belonged to. This was a church that had two large services with children going to the Sunday school at the same time as the services were. So once a month there was a smaller group within this large church. Everyone was invited, 100 people or so, and this was called family worship, and called that because the other services excluded the children, basically. And at that time, we had also family education, and so there was a class hour before the service where adults and children were separated, like you're talking about there, into groups of education. Then they went into a church service. Now the church service, our children, if I can judge by their attitude and attitudes of other children, that they just waited for family worship. Are we having family worship today, every Sunday morning? So what happened was, this was a more informal service. We didn't use the second setting of the green hymnal. We used something else. We used an Elvis soccer, or we used something informal. We asked for the children who were of an age to be able to use an instrument to accompany. So what ended up was he had a small band with percussion and piano and flute and guitar and that kind of thing, and they participated. We had a family choir, and that would practice once a month. This was people who didn't want to be involved every single week with 2 hours of practice. And on that Sunday morning, the adults would practice and bring their children, and this was a 45-minute choir rehearsal. And we'd sing a relatively simple song, which was fine to do. It wasn't meant for performance, it was meant for a family experience. And so adults and children together would be in this choir, and it was probably about 15 people. And the whole thing was really a neat experience.
Did the program last for a long period of time?
Yeah, well, it lasted. Yeah, it really did. Mm-hmm. We eventually moved away. It was still going strong.
Yeah.
I don't know how it is now, but it got to be a rather close-knit group of 100 people. Mm-hmm. That's possible.
I'm curious, what's special about your church that you keep going?
I don't know. But you got any, all I know is that the kids run in and they sit down in the front row, and and participate, and we don't do anything special that I know of. I know the children are highly thought of by the lay people. I mean, they come up and they greet them before and after service and call them by name and all that kind of thing. I know that's true. But we don't do that much with regard to the liturgy that's unusual.
I think one thing I've noticed, like in our church, the families with the younger children, where they used to sit in the back, have now moved up and they sit up in front. And the children are actually quieter sitting up in front than they are when they sit toward the back of the church.
That's because they can see what's going on. They're not behind a sea of kids.
Oh, yes.
Because there are some awful, mysterious things that go on there.
The backs of people's heads are very interesting.
I know at a church in Seattle, the minister is now allowing the younger children to take communion. It's sort of like in the Greek church, which my background is, they take the bread, they have it at a different age than they take the wine. And I was very interested because he said he was patterning it after the Greek Orthodox church. The children are eager to go to that service. They know they're well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering that the Lutheran church couldn't open up to this.
That's a theological issue, and it's one that's it's a red hot debate topic right
as
now.
As a person that took it at that age, I know it didn't do me any harm.
A living example.
I just want to make this comment. We have a children's service sermon during our service, and I've been watching that over the years, wishing that my children had that one when they were little. And it seems to me, as I'm watching this, it doesn't matter so much what the minister does in that sermonette, but the children just love to go. They know him. He knows them by name.
Mm-hmm.
He has learned to know each child in a way as they respond, as they sit down, and they come to the front and sit on the steps, and he sits on the steps with them. And there's things going on that are just, I feel, are just continuing. And I've been watching this and wishing for that in other areas of our church. They're building a rapport with one another so that they want to shake his hand and see him a lot. And I'm thinking to myself, perhaps we should shoot less for perfection in this world where, you know, you turn on the television and everybody has this perfect performance.
Yeah.
That we do, like you said, in a family worship, that we learn to experience things that are less than perfect, just to go through something together and to live together, because most of us don't have any extended families. And I sometimes see some of those little children thinking of the minister as their grandfather or their whatever, their uncle, someone who's missing in their family. And so I think maybe it would help if we would reconsider some of the old things that we're used to doing and not say, this is good because we've always done it this way.
Yeah. I hear a couple of points in that. I mean, I think, first of all, of Mary's discussion this evening with the children, how many of them use the word special. Now, they probably got that word special from their mother and father, but it stuck, obviously. And what the pastor is doing, regardless of the content of the children's sermon, the pastor, in a sense, is saying that the kids are important to the life of the church. I mean, that's what the whole operation communicates. And so the child is not going to feel like an extra wheel or that this is not my place where I don't belong. And I mean, that, I think, is a wonderful effect that the whole idea of the children's sermon can have. Then your point about perfection, too. We don't really expect, most people don't demand that the liturgy be done like a Broadway play, you know, where every line comes out spick and span. We can tolerate a fair amount of of mistakes here and there. We don't want deliberate sloppiness. We don't want slubbing. What's the word? Slubbiness? Whatever that is. On the other hand, it's us who are in the chancel, and if we make a boo-boo from now and then, that's just fine because we're worshiping together. Most people have a far higher degree of tolerance, I think, for those sorts of things than the nervous people in the chancel probably are willing to admit. And we have to constantly see that sense. This is our worship. This is not a stage in which the pastor is putting on a performance or the choir is putting on a performance, but all of us doing it together. And there's a different sense, I think, in that kind of worship when people have that feeling. Yes, ma'am.
In our church, and maybe this is in other churches, the whole family goes up for communion, mm-hmm. babes in arms included, and our pastor blesses them.
So the children that don't receive then get blessed.
Communion with instructions since fourth grade and up.
Uh-huh.
That's worked very well, and we've done it for some years, actually.
And so the child that takes communion is about how old?
Well, that would be after instruction, I suppose about 10 years old.
Okay.
But the little one, the whole family goes up together, babies included, and our pastor puts his hand on them.
I will have to say, my Elizabeth is 7. That hand isn't good enough. She wants bread.
Our congregation has something very similar to that. Our children are 5th grade and they receive instruction. And we have 4 children just recently started First Communion. And the little ones who are 5 and 6, they wonder what's wrong with them. Why can't they take part? And the thing that especially irritated me to the point that I was just about ready to look for another congregation is that when the church council voted on all this, none of the people on the council have children of this age.
So they couldn't sympathize.
So they had nothing literally to do with the issue at hand. Yeah. And I just don't, it really annoys me terribly that in our society, we tend to expect so much more from our children than what we would expect from another adult. Somebody earlier used the illustration of sitting in a group of physicists and scientists and things going over their heads. You know, picture yourself sitting in a situation like that, people talking maybe a different language entirely.